supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. I spoke at the wedding of my best friend from when I was 5 years old. It was in Santa Cruz. It was this past summer. She was marrying her partner of 32 years because they were waiting for gay marriage to become legal in California. They have two children, one from my friend's first marriage to a man, and one her partner carried after they were together. This family would not have been possible even 10 years ago today. And by the way, this was the most loving, tender-hearted love fest I've ever experienced in my whole life anywhere. This is a modern family, as are step families, and some of those step families have three marriages with three sets of in-laws and ex-spouses and various children from various marriages. Modern families are of different religions, races, and cultures. Family relationships have always been difficult to navigate. We heard about this from the ancient Greeks. We hear about it with Abraham and Sarah in the Bible. Talk about a complicated relationship. And, of course, Shakespeare. But the more complex families get, the more complex the issues get. And is today's family and marital therapy keeping up with the changes in families? Well, with me to answer all of those questions and more is my colleague, my friend, Dr. Stephen Treat. He's a senior marriage and family therapist at the Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia, where he's also the CEO emeritus. He's co-authored two books, Pastoral Marital Therapy and Couples in Treatment, Techniques and Approaches for Effective Practice. In addition, he's published numerous book chapters and articles on process and content of marital and family therapy. He also has a TEDx talk that you can find on our website, and I'm hoping you can give me some pointers for my upcoming TEDx talk. So we'd love you to have join the conversation. Our number is 888-477-9499. It's kind of an open show about families, where we run into trouble, where we get stuck, and more important, how to get unstuck from these problems. 888-477-9499. Please call early in the show. I have a feeling we're going to get backed up on the phones fairly quickly. Steve, it's nice to be with you.
Great to be with you, Dan.
So let's go to the beginning. And no, we're not going to start with Abraham and Sarah, not that far. So marriages, they come together. And we don't talk about our expectations, but inevitably, each partner comes with a different vision of what it means to be in a family.
Every time. They're coming from a different background. They're coming from a different cultural background. They have different kind of senses of what's right and wrong. And if the couple can't communicate and process all that material at a very early stage, they can often end up in a lot of trouble.
One of the founders of family therapy, one of our teachers, said that the function of children is to go out and recreate the family they grew up in.
They often do. They're often very powerful loyalties on the positive or the negative side, where these children figure out that in order to be loyal to my mom and dad, in order to get their approval and get their love, I'll be loyal to their behaviors, to their ways of communicating, to the levels of intimacy the parents have. So the relationships that these kids watch is a huge determiner for how their ability to relate down the road.
Where else do we learn?
That's correct.
How else do we learn?
That's correct. It doesn't mean it has to be repeated in that way, but a child growing up in their 20s and into their 30s better think about their own background, what they watched, what they saw, to make some decisions to maybe make other choices for their own lives.
Is it that easy, Steve, making a choice?
You know, it is at some level if you're willing to be humble, if you're willing to recognize that you're just a human being, that your perceptions are just your perceptions, that you have a lot of strengths and weaknesses. So it's this ability, really, that the core issue is the ability to reflect. Can you really reflect on your own functioning, on your own self, figure out where some of it came from? And if you can reflect, you can make choice.
And that's the case regardless of the marriage, whether it's a gay and lesbian marriage, the issues are the same.
Doesn't matter what the relationship is. The term I use is, can you reflect without reference? What I mean by that is, an exercise for everyone to do is think of the last time that you got angry, and can you reflect about why you got angry without referring to another person? Because the reason you got angry is something in you got touched, and if you can figure out what in you gets touched, then you can start to work on it, and work on it in a way besides just projecting it out or blaming somebody else.
Hmm. What about when couples come with religious differences, spiritual differences?
They're huge. And, you know, these are more and more common relationships. In my own family, we have a lot of intermarriage of different cultures and different backgrounds. And the most important thing is they understand the power of their legacy and the fact that these are very important cultural issues that they might be carrying forth, and can they communicate enough about them to find ground, to find a way, to find a pathway through both cultures so both people can be honored and no one gets discounted.
Let me give out the number again. We're already getting a lot of callers. The number is 888-477-9499. Dr. Steve Treat and I are talking about a wide range of issues that affect families. We're going to be talking also about, you know, when to connect, how to stay married, and when is it time to leave, and what to do then. Again, 888-477-9499. Let's go right to the phones. We've got Ashley. Hi, Ashley.
Hi there.
Hi there. What can we do for you?
I was wondering how to make my mother be more accepting of my boyfriend, who happens to be 14 years younger than me.
Well, okay, so how do you change your mother's attitude about your boyfriend?
Mm-hmm. because I've seen him make a real effort to be conscientious and kind.
You've seen who make a real effort?
My boyfriend.
Okay. All right. I have some thoughts, but I'm going to pass it over to the expert first.
Well, there's no expert on this topic except for the fact you could just kind of think about some different things. One is, are you reactive to your mother? In other words, if you're reactive to your mother, it tends to keep it going. And if you can be just thoughtful and caring to your mom, letting her know this is important to you, that's a really important piece. Your own differentiation from your mom is one of the key notions about this. And recognizing that she's not trying to hurt you, but she's probably trying to protect you in her own way. She's trying to...
I see that.
You know, and that's good. If you can see that, then you can sit down with her, you know, sit next to her, not against her, and let her know that as an adult, this is your choice, and that she really needs to think about it and work with it as much as possible, that as an adult, this really is your choice to go forward.
I would add something onto that also, Ashley, and that is, before you try to change anybody, you know, take a page out of Psychotherapy 101, and that's ask a lot of questions, you know. So ask your mother, partly why she's distressed. Ask her a little more about it. Ask her what her discomfort's about. I mean, it's underneath her judgment, there's discomfort on her part. And it might be helpful to have her explore it and listen to her deeper feelings, and maybe then she'll be able to listen to yours. You know, what you want ultimately, what'll make this work, is whether she likes him or not, wouldn't it be great if she would respect him and you could respect her feelings also?
That would be great.
Yeah.
One last piece, too, Ashley, is it's very important that your boyfriend also not be reactive to her. Because if he becomes reactive to her, then you're going to find yourself managing the emotions of both people. And if he can understand that this is a classic story of a loving mother, and if he can find a way to like her and relate to her and not get reactive to her, that will be very helpful to you.
Yeah, he's also, if he's 14 years younger than you, I'm not going to ask you your age, but he's probably on the young side, and this is going to be difficult. This is going to be difficult for him, you know, and, your job is to not to be responsible for his feelings. Just ask his patience and understanding.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Take care. Good luck. It's the in-law issue. And I've heard something that in-law relationships can be difficult every now and then, or maybe more every now than then. It was a problem in my marriage. It's a problem in how many of the couples I treat and you treat. So usually it's about either an intrusive in-law or it's about extreme loyalty of the son or daughter and fear of ruffling a parent's feather.
It's the latter I mostly go after. A parent could be intrusive or not, but if the child is not differentiated enough, if they haven't become their own person. I got married at 21, and I hadn't done any of that emotional work. And it was difficult in the beginning, but if you've done that work, you become your own person, you have much more of a chance to talk as a peer to your own parent, much better chance to negotiate certain kinds of dynamics than if you haven't done that work.
Well, now I wonder what's happening now that people are getting married later, and some people are making families without being married at all. So I wonder, with age, are you more likely to be able to be comfortable with yourself and not have to have anxiety about ruffling a parent's feather?
Ideally, I think that's true, but I don't think age has much to do with it. You can be 50 years old and still regress every time you see your mother at Thanksgiving or your father at Thanksgiving. So I don't think age is the determiner of that.
Well, Thomas More, who writes an awful lot about the soul, he said, there's a reason why we use the language going back home. Back.
Exactly.
That it's you lose 10 years of your emotional life, at least.
Well, this period of time of the high holidays, Thanksgiving's coming up, Christmas come up, many people are going to be celebrating their holidays over the next 3 or 4 months, and classic question I'll ask is, will you regress when you go home? You know, somebody who's running a company or somebody who's running has an enormous amount of responsibility in their life, and they turn into a 14-year-old as soon as they get home with their mom and dad. And that dynamic is actually very difficult for a spouse.
I love, by the way, how you opened your TED Talk about, you said you were 60, your mother was 90.
Right.
And she was criticizing your driving.
Right.
I love where you took it
from
there. You know, you asked the audience, you know, what could I have said and what age was I? No, it's just great. What were some of the answers here?
Well, my mother's been a loving mother all 91 years of her life now. It's 1 year later, and when she is telling me how to drive, and she takes out the old Exxon map, and sometimes it's an old Esso map, actually.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, I've got my Garmin up front, and she's giving me a running rendition of how to drive. I need to recognize it's just a loving way of being, and I can give her a hug and tell her she's a pain in the neck sometimes, and she laughs and recognize that it's not her trying to control me or trying to judge me or put me down. If I take those as powerful emotions with her, I've stayed regressed and have not become my own person. So,
let me add one other thing that's happening with her, if I may.
Sure.
As one who's now an expert in that area, that I'm a passenger now, that I do that sometimes too. And I do it when my baseline anxiety or insecurity is up. And when it's down, I don't.
No question.
Yeah, so I'm suffering when I do that. And of course, I make the driver suffer too, but, you know.
Look, it's a dynamic of almost all parents, and we will fall into the same rubric. The question is, how differentiated is the child? And can they recognize their parents are loving and caring and trying to, and not receive it and not react like a child?
Yeah, it's not mommy doing this. It's
exactly.
A 90-year-old woman.
Exactly.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Tom on the line. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm a divorced person, and I've had a tough time with self-identity as a divorced person. And by that I mean that I have some, sort of negative feelings about divorce that, you know, predated whatever happened with me, that, you know, come from my childhood and my upbringing and my own personal convictions. And now as a divorced person, I'm kind of dealing with, I guess, my own thoughts of personal failure, maybe, or just simple kind of negativity and maybe just learning how to accept myself better, accept my situation, and have maybe a more nuanced view of divorce.
A lot of reflection in your statement. So I like that very much, from just even the way you presented the question. And going from a divorce to a single person is always an identity issue. But a couple things I'd have you think about is that we could look at divorce as a failure. It's a possibility, but I'd have you look at it from a whole bunch of other angles also. I don't know what happened in your marriage, but perhaps you weren't growing. Maybe your partner wasn't growing. Maybe at some level it was a success. Maybe at some level it's going to spur you on for more individual growth in different kinds of ways. And while we try very hard to have marriages succeed, sometimes they're not meant to be. And if you stay married for the rest of your life, sometimes that's not the best thing. Sometimes it's better to grow and move on and see if you can develop a different part of yourself.
I would also add on to that, that you'll have a better handle on what happened in your marriage in about 5 years. And that for now, just know that you're hurting inside, you're suffering. Certainly part of it is grief and fear of the future and all those things. So don't waste your energy analyzing what happened or who is to blame or get involved in self-judgment or self-loathing. You know, here's a guy that's suffering right now, and that's where the attention has to go, to your suffering. And now you have an opportunity. Now you have an opportunity. Once the bleeding slows down, you have an opportunity to look in the mirror and say, okay, who is Tom now? Tell me about this man now. What's your experience of being you? And let that relationship develop. Let that relationship become intimate. The one between you and you.
The backstory to that is, if you cannot go into another relationship immediately, give yourself some time. I know it can be lonely, it can be difficult, it can be sad, but to jump into another relationship immediately, you lose some of that ability to just reflect, get used to yourself, be happy with who you are. So try and give yourself some time to recover.
I hope that was helpful for you, Tom.
It is, and I'd love to ask a follow-up if you have time, but it was very helpful. Thank you.
We've got, give us a quick give us a quick follow-up. But we're going to make you pay extra for this one on the fundraiser.
Okay, I'll get out my checkbook.
Okay.
So I have really, it has opened doors. It's true. And, you know, the things that you said, it's true, you know, that, you know, it helps me grow. But at the same time, I do feel like I sort of disappointed my children and hurt my children. And as much as I love the personal growth that came from, you know, the new open doors, there's a little bit of a guilt feeling that it happened at the expense of, you know, people who are very precious to me and who I was supposed to be taking care of first.
The likelihood is, Tom, that your children were hurt, are hurt. How long this pain lasts and whether this hurt is crippling, I don't know, really. It's not likely that it's permanent, but of course it depends on what kind of parents he has, they have, and what kind of relationship you have with their mom. If you can co-parent directly, if you can co-parent together, if you're pulling the oar in the same direction, that really mitigates risk of them getting hurt. That's a big topic of co-parenting after divorce.
Two quick things.
Yeah.
Don't ever put down your wife. And the second thing is just work on attachment with your children. Work on play. Enter their world. Anything where you're just kind of sharing and playing and being with them, that's where you'll gain and learn, you know, get the most power.
Tom, I wish you the best, and I appreciate your calling into Voices in the Family. We've got to take a break, Stephen, and when we come back, let's talk about co-parenting after divorce. That's a very important issue. And, yeah, be a big-time issue. We're talking with Dr. Steve Treat. He's the senior marriage and family therapist for Counsel for Relationship, where he's the CEO emeritus. We're talking about families in general, and modern families, today's families. Our number is 888-477-9499. We've got one or two lines open. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Call about anything you like that's family-related, relationship-related. Well, we'll be back in just 60 seconds. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Does your son or daughter come home drunk or high? Would you like to learn new ways of dealing with their drug or alcohol use? The Family Training Program works with parents of children aged 12 to 25 to help them maintain control of their child's drug or alcohol problem. Held in Philadelphia by the Treatment Research Institute, a supporter of WHYY. More on the Family Training Program at 877-I-WORRY-2. That's 877-I-WORRY and the number 2. Or online at iamconcerned.org.
I'm Dr. Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute. Wistar proudly supports WHYY and announces the opening of its new 7-story Robert and Penny Fox Tower, designed to accelerate scientific discoveries. Here, Wistar scientists are working together to develop a new drug that targets and attacks the cause of prostate cancer. Learn more about this and other advances at wistar.org. The Wistar Institute, today's discoveries, tomorrow's cures.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Dr. Stephen Treat, senior therapist, CEO emeritus of the Council for Relationships. Hey, what does a CEO emeritus really do?
Minds his own business. Stays in his corner office and tries to support the organization as much as possible without being intrusive.
There's a word for that.
What is that?
Wisdom,
yeah,
old guy.
Wisdom is exactly right.
So, you know, before the break, we talked about co-parenting after divorce. That's difficult. You know, if the relationship was good, they wouldn't have divorced in the first place. And often in these adversarial divorces, the kids are pawns in this process. What do parents need to do to come back and, you know, as one of my colleagues once said, love their kids more than they hate their ex.
I think that's well said. They just have to focus on what the children need. And if the children are split between both parents, or forced to love one parent and not another, or can't tell one parent that the other had a wonderful time with the other parent, these things just split a child in half. And then they'll often choose in the early years and often switch their choice later on in life. The statement I like to say is, you know, the parent that fills them with the most venom loses.
Yeah.
Over time.
Yeah, and then it affects these children more often than not, their choice.
The other thing they watch is they watch the interaction between the two of you. So there's lots of different kinds of rules. It's kind of idiosyncratic for every family of how much time should you spend together or not together, how separated should you be. But what we don't want is we don't want a lot of anxiety, anger, angst that the children watch between the parents after a divorce. We want to mitigate that as much as possible.
Simple, huh?
All
children need the same thing.
They do.
Safety and love.
They do.
And
very difficult to do because you feel so passionate or you feel hurt. Or I was in a situation a couple days ago where the husband had an affair. There was a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old, and the wife wanted to sit the children down and tell them, this is what your father's been doing. And we're working hard to have her not do that. And her response was, well, don't you want me to be honest? And I said, absolutely not.
No.
It will not benefit the children at any level. The children are 25 or 30, and they have their own identities, their own sense of selves. You want to start sharing some of that material when they have some wisdom on how difficult relationships are? Perhaps. But not at 13, not at 11, for sure.
Yeah, you use the right word, Steve. Will it help these children
right.
in their lives?
Is this going to move their life forward? Is this going to make them happier? Is
right.
this going to help them be more adjusted?
Right. And, more secure.
And more secure, exactly right. And if it's not, don't do it, no matter what you feel.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Charlotte. On the line. Charlotte? No, I'm sorry, we have Joshua on the Joshua?
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, so I'm in a relationship, and I'm not sure if it's the right fit for me.
Go on.
It's a gay relationship, and at first I was so sure of everything, but I guess just over the past few years, we've been together for a while, our priorities have shifted, and we're just not on the same page. He wants to, buy a house, which I do too, but he's talking about getting kids, which I'm not ready for kids. And it just seems like we're just not on the same page.
How long have you been together?
Almost 4 years now.
Okay.
So if you're not on the same page, the question is, can you get there?
And do you want to?
And do you want to? So if you can...
Yeah, if I want to or not. I'm not sure.
So see how much you can put of this, of the feelings you have, the thoughts you have, into a really good dialogue with them. Well, you're asking just a series of questions and probing his feelings and thinking, and then ask him to do the same with you to see if you can find a path.
The other thing is, I'm 28, and I feel like I'm still young, and, I have a great job, and, everything is going so well for me right now, and same for him. But I want to focus on my life right now before we even think about kids, before we think about anything like that. And it's just like a one-sided conversation where he wants to have kids in a year, and there's no way I'm at all ready for that.
Well, kids is an interesting issue, but it's the one of the things you can't compromise. You know, if you're trying to decide where to go on vacation, you could probably compromise that, but you can't compromise a kid. You either have one or you don't. So I can't say enough to see if you can probe why he wants a child so quickly. Why does he want one in a year? What's his thought process and emotions around it? And have him do that with you. But if you can't figure it out,
don't try and put a square peg in a round hole. I mean, really step back and say, is this the right relationship? Many people will go down a road like that and realize too late that it wasn't, and they weren't really being honest with themselves or their own emotions.
And that's what I'm afraid of, is that it's, you know, if I'm having these doubts right now, who's to say 10 years from now it's going to be better?
If you're having these doubts right now, if you guys don't get work this out, you know, it's going to come back and bite you in the butt. I mean, you can't put it underground and make believe it's not there. It stays there. It stays in the body, and it's going to get you.
I don't know how many times in relationships, gay or straight, but people want to commit that I've heard, you know, 5 years later, 10 years later, I did not listen to myself. I didn't listen to my own feelings. I ignored certain behaviors. I ignored certain things. And just make sure you're not doing that.
Yeah, I want to, before you speak with him about this, speak with you about it also. You know, so that you can open up at least to yourself. How do you feel about him? Do you want to be in a relationship with him as he is now, not as he could be or should be or as he was? Do you want to be in this relationship? Do you want to devote yourself to this relationship? That's the first question. And if that's yes, then you go into this discussion. And, you know, you're more open. You're more self-reflective. It's just a thought.
What I do find in most of those kinds of discussions where people fail, even though they think they're doing well, is they don't really probe the emotions and feelings of the other person. They don't really probe the thought process. It's more each person giving an opinion, but it doesn't get you anywhere because the conversation goes over and over and over again. It just keeps recycling.
Josh, thanks so much for calling, and I do hope it
Good
was
luck.
Helpful, and I wish you the best. I want to talk about this push we have in our lives these days for happiness. My parents didn't push for happiness. You know, they pushed for survival. What are your thoughts about this push for happiness as the be-all and end-all?
Well, happiness is on the scale. If you're pushing for survival, you're not thinking about happiness. You're thinking about food on the table and how to get a roof over your head. And as our economy has come back and people have more abilities to do things and more options to do things, the idea of happiness is, I think, taken over to some degree. The difficulty with it is, you know, how do you actually get to happiness?
What is it?
And what is it? That's exactly right. And I have some pretty strong opinions that it's not about the best vacation home or the best toy or the best fun event you can do. I think real happiness is going to come out of self-concept. And the question I always ask someone is, are you building something? Are you building something that's you? Are you building something that you're proud of? And that could be a million different things. It could be being an excellent parent. It could be work, it could be a business, it could be lots of different environments. But are you building something that's building your own identity and sense of self? Are you in conversation with yourself?
I read an article recently that as we age, happiness, and this is probably the case throughout life, happiness comes from experiences and not possessions or accomplishments.
I think it comes from experiences, and it comes from integrating the experiences you've had. Because if you know your story and you know your history, and there's a level of forgiveness and a level of understanding, and you're just a human being, and you actually apply some sense of acceptance to your own life, there's a happiness that comes out of that.
I've quoted the Dalai Lama. I just read this quote, and I love it. He said, people are happier when they want what they have rather than when they have what they want.
Right. Exactly. So I I think happiness can be attained, but I think it has to go through the acceptance of all the different aspects of life, who you are, where you are. And in this next generation of kids growing up, I think it's just crucial that they just don't go after happiness. You know, that could look like a drug. It could look like all sorts of things. They better build something.
Yeah.
They better develop their own sense of self, because without it, there's a level of insecurity for the rest of their life.
Well, my mantra is the more relationships you're in, the more people you love and care about, the happier you are.
Yep, and who love you, for right? sure.
And that's the way you find happiness. One last question. We talked about something, I think it was before the break, and that was the affair. Is that a death knell?
No. No, I would say...
That was a softball, by the way. Yeah. I kind of knew you were going to say.
I think about probably, if I had to put a percentage on, about 50%, maybe a little more of couples who have an affair, one person or both have had an affair, comes out. They have a horrific first couple months with it, usually. But often it can help a relationship grow. An affair becomes the... incident that they start to talk for the first time and they haven't talked for years. They start to really talk honestly for the first time and they haven't talked for years. And while we're not looking for an affair, and we hope an affair doesn't happen, sometimes it spurs a level of relationship and reflection on the relationship and insight and honest communication that has just been wanting for the last number of years
it's
in the marriage.
It's really hard, Steve, to get past the betrayal.
Well, it is, except for you need two things. I mean, in every affair, and this is a very controversial thing for couples to hear, but in every affair there are two aspects of it. One is the person who had the affair lost their integrity at some level. They went underground. They became dishonest. They lost a level of their own integrity. And they need to look at that as an individual basis. It has nothing to do with anyone else. But the second part of it is, did not happen in a vacuum. This relationship itself had enough room in the relationship for the affair to happen. So there was a lack of communication, a lack of relationship, a lack of emotional closeness. There's a lack of intimacy in that relationship almost 100% of the time.
You're on thin ice here.
I am on very thin ice.
Because
I'm not blaming someone, but I will tell you that most of the reason that affairs turn into divorce is the person who feels like they were victimized plays that role forever and never takes responsibility for themselves in the marriage. I'm not talking about responsibility for the affair, but take responsibility for their own functioning in their marriage for the intimacy problems.
Explain.
Couple's been distant for a very long time. They've been angry for a very long time. They've been arguing for a very long time. It's both people. Couple hasn't been talking for a very long time. They both withdraw. They're both in their own worlds. Somebody's with the children. Somebody's with work. You know, vice versa in this day and age, it's both people's issue.
How about the guy that says, you know, I'm just young and immature, and I, you know, it was not her fault. She's a good woman. The marriage was good.
It's not an issue of fault. We get out of fault. But I will tell you, even there, if you go a little more unconsciously, if we really go into the work, why did we marry the person we married? Did we see this person from the beginning as someone who could really be, you know, honest and forthright and caring and intimate with you? Or were we all kids when we got married or too young and we didn't really take a real good look at the partner we were marrying? So there are investments at all sorts of levels.
So you would disagree with the line I remember that I love from the old play, The Iceman Cometh? Where he's sitting at a bar talking to a friend of his, and he says, I married the perfect wife. He said, I sleep with other women. I come home, meals on the table. She forgives me. No matter what I do, she loves and forgives me. And he turns to the colleague, and he said, I had no choice. I had to kill her.
Yeah, no, that's a woman with no identity, and that's a guy with enormous amount of intimacy fears. You know, one of the universal truths is that we all have fears about being intimate. None of us grew up in safe an environment. None of our parents were perfect. None of our schooling experience was so perfect that we feel totally safe being vulnerable with someone else.
Are you suggesting that I am not the only one in the world with abandonment issues?
Yeah, there are two sitting in the room right now. Exactly. So we need both partners to look at that as one aspect of recovering from an affair. And the other aspect is for the individual person to go in and do some therapy and figure out why they went underground without blaming their partner. Mm. We need both things, and then sometimes it really works well, bringing the marriage back together.
We've got to take a short break. After that, we got a bunch of callers. We're talking about families, family relationships, modern families, how things work in these things we call families. And we're doing it with Dr. Steve Treat, a senior therapist and CEO emeritus of the Council for Relationships. Our number is 888-477-9499. Like I said, we'll be back in just 1 minute. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY FM.
The Solana Doylestown and Atria Senior Living Residence proudly supports WHYY. Opening this fall, the Solana Doylestown will offer independent living, supportive living, and memory care options for older adults. Details at solanadoylestown.com.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Edith Stern lived in a Nazi concentration camp as a young woman. Now she lives in a retirement home in Chicago that caters to the last generation of Holocaust survivors.
They also came from Europe. They also suffered. And we had very much in common. And I felt I was at home.
That story next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Pennsylvania Farmers Union. Family farmers working together to ensure the survival of a diversified food system by serving as a vital voice for family-scale agriculture. More information at pafarmersunion.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. We are talking about families. We're talking about the many, many voices in the family, and that's exactly how the show got its name, because we want to listen to all of the voices in the family. I am here with my buddy, my colleague, Steve Treat, the CEO emeritus of the Council for Relationship. And if you didn't listen to the previous segment, I learned what a CEO emeritus is, and you're just going to have to listen to the podcast. So there, let's go to the phones. We've got Sarah on the line. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. I have a middle schooler who suffered from anxiety and depression at the end of the last school year, and he's gotten support, and he's doing really well, and he's ready for this school year, and he's excited and happy. And I'm wondering, though, as a parent, how do you balance that overprotectiveness that you feel with letting him go and do his own thing? And I can take my answer off
there. Oh, no, you don't, young lady. You're there?
I can't get away that easy.
You're not, are you kidding me? Have you ever listened to this show?
Yeah.
Look what you just said, though, which is so great. You have already the reflection of, okay, here we have a child who's got, you know, some anxiety. It's a very common issue, and you want to make sure you don't overfunction, overparent, you know, don't overprotect, give them enough reins. Just your thought process and your reflection mm-hmm. about that puts you in good stead. And you can get a little feedback from the people that know you and love you the most, and just keep probing it. No right answers to it, but just if you can keep reflecting on that, you're probably going to do great.
Yeah, one of the chapters in my new book is called Parenting Between Fear and Faith, and that is
that's about the size of it.
That's exactly where you are. You know, I certainly understand your fears, and letting go is always, always an act of faith. And I want to tell you this, Sarah. You're not going to ruin this young man. You know, if he fails a little bit, you know, and he falls down a little bit, you're not going to ruin his life. If, you know, you err on the other side a little bit, you're not going to ruin his life. So don't get too obsessed with each little decision and each little move. And one other thing, I want to underscore the mantra you've been hearing today from Steve, and to a certain extent from me also, that there's something going on with Sarah also, and you've got your anxiety and your fears. So Take a look.
I'm sorry for my beeping phone.
Huh?
I didn't know my phone was beeping. I apologize.
It's okay.
You can hear that on here.
Sarah, you've got your anxieties and your fears, and I just ask you to know what they are and care for you. You know, you might have these nightmare scenarios in your head.
Right, definitely.
Yeah, you know what? With a young man with a mother like you, I doubt if it's going to be a nightmare here. I just doubt it. And, you know, if the anxiety goes up higher for you, you know, go get a little family therapy for a couple of sessions, you know?
Sure. Okay,
and I recommend the Council for Relationships, by the way. They're pretty good.
Of course.
All right. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
It really is. It's a balance between fear and faith. I mean, if you live on the faith thing, you know, the child's in trouble.
And the child's going to often go off the anxieties of the parents.
So,
you know, if the parent can take care of themselves and calm down and recognize the normalcy of some of that, it'll help a lot.
Right. Let's see if we can get another phone call. We've got Mike on the line. Mike?
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening in earlier, and the question has to do with my changing identity in my marriage. We've been together a long time, and she, you know, was with me through sick and thin during my alcoholism and addiction. And going on 10 months in, you know, a 12-step program, and a lot of things are changing for me. A lot of things are great. We actually have a marriage for the first time. And in my program, I've learned to live in the day and the time, day by day, in the minute, as much as I can. And I have made amends with her, and, you know, the things I've done in the past towards our relationship were quite abhorrent at times. But I think sometimes she just keeps bringing it up, and I just try to say we have to move on. And my question is, how do I tell her that, you know, we need to move on from this?
Apparently, you did try to tell her that several times.
I think every time it does come up, I do tell her, like,
and
listen,
so,
I'm trying to change here, you know. And
so how's that working so far when you tell her we have to move on? I'm guessing it's not working so well.
Well, you know, it's not something that she really hangs on to. I mean, she'll kind of, like, just say, okay. I mean, but it takes, you know, I have to constantly remind her, like, listen, this is, you know, we can't bring up the past all the time. I don't behave like that. I don't act like that. You know, I'm trying to change on a daily basis.
Let me be your wife for a minute.
So, okay.
All right. So, Mike, you know, you can say all that, but I've been betrayed by your behavior, your addiction, for a long, long time. I've been hurt very deeply. And I feel injured, I feel fearful and mistrustful of you. And for you to be sober for just a couple of months and say to me we have to move on and basically ignore your past behavior and ignore me, that's not fair. That's not fair, and you're asking too damn much of me. So there.
That's very fair, Dr. Gottlieb. I think that definitely puts a really good perspective on it. Sometimes, you know, we try to, in this program, try to not be self-centered and selfish, but I think, you know, it's really hard to break from that, you know, character defect that a lot of addicts and alcoholics suffer from. So, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Wait a minute.
The other reality that I would urge you to say is it takes an enormous amount of courage to go through recovery you're going through, and I give you a ton of credit. But I do want you to recognize that you're a different person. And if you stay in recovery, you're going to be a different person. And the rules that were established when you were drinking and your wife's roles and your roles are going to all become very different. So this transitional time, it's so important that you and your wife either do some work together. She looks at her own growth. There are possibilities now in the marriage that were never there while you were drinking. But this is huge change for both of you, and you both have to really address the change, take a look at some of the fears that come with this change, and even though it's much healthier, it still can get very frightening.
I don't know if your wife goes to Al-Anon, but I strongly, strongly suggest that if she's willing. But
I have often, recommended that to her, and she just doesn't want to have anything to do with it. And I go to therapy, twice a month now. I mean, it was weekly when I first got into recovery, and I did everything they suggested to do this time around. I mean, I really surrendered this time, and I'm taking it, as a life or death situation. But I tell her that she needs to be in this process with me sometimes, and I don't think she fully understands the process. But what you said earlier about, giving her a chance to it's been, 10 plus years of her living through some of my hell.
Right, right.
And, I can't really expect her after 10 months to say, oh, great, you're right.
Right. You have, this disease has betrayed her. So you both have to be patient. I mean, Mike, it's a long process. Be patient.
Yeah. It is.
Be patient with her, and be patient with you. It's not a smooth and linear process. Okay, bless your heart for doing this work, Mike. Really, good for you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. Well, Steve, any new research? I mean, what I'm hearing from you and me is good, solid psychotherapy interventions. What? Is there any new research?
A lot of the new research is organized around the normalcy of all these different types of relationships and how to make them work, because they are going to be the reality down the road. Single marriages, single parenting, gay marriages, straight marriages, intercultural marriages, et cetera, and to take a look at what are the dynamics underneath that make any one of those families work and how children can prosper under each one of them.
Well said. Steve, I got to tell you, I had the best time spending time with you.
Great to see you, Dan.
This has been great. You too. You look great for an emeritus, guys,
exactly.
By the way. We're talking with Steve Treat, who's a senior therapist and CEO emeritus of the Council for Relationships. Well, I referred earlier to our podcasts. You can go to whyy.org/voices, or we're on iTunes. You can follow us at Twitter at Voices in the Fam. Email us at voices@whyy.org. And you can always reach me at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineers for today's show have been Diane Martinez and Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez-Luner is our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our production assistant. Lindsay Carfagno is our intern. Mike and Scott's our executive. Gita Simons produces the show. Me, I'm Dan.
Here now.